You know what I love most about sangria is that you get snacks with your drink.
But they're soaked in alcohol, so...
I know, but they're still snacks.
They're snacks, but eat with caution. They will put you on your ass.
The tales are depraved and spooky. The drinks they sip are boozy. Tune in and you'll hear a doozy. The Tipsy and Depraved.
Hey everybody, this is Tipsy and Depraved, a morbid history podcast where we explore some of the darkest stories humanity has to offer. Each episode will have a master of depravity who will select a specific topic or theme, then each of us will tell a different story that matches. To make it even more fun, we also choose a cocktail to go along with the episode that you can make at home and sip along. So I'm Jackie, and I am this week's master of depravity.
And I'm Karina.
And I'm Chelsea.
And this week, the cocktail that we are choosing for you guys to sip along with is some classic Spanish sangria, which if you have not made it at home yourself before, all you need is a bottle of some fruity but dry red wine, some brandy, and some fresh fruit. You're going to chop up your fruit, combine a whole bottle of red wine, about a half a cup of brandy into a pitcher. You're going to let that sucker sit overnight, and then you're going to pour it into a wine glass and just... enjoy it. It's delicious.
So good.
So good. I love me some
Already
sangria.
Toasty.
Yes. It does the job.
I just want to say that's the most beautiful intro I think we've had yet. It was seamless.
Oh, thank you. It was beautiful. Oh, thank you. But the reason why we chose sangria this week is because we're going to be talking about pandemics or plagues, whatever you want to call them.
I like plague better.
And yeah, what plagues me more than the day after I drink a full pitcher of sangria?
Not much.
That's not why we picked it. I'm sorry. I just thought it was funny. It popped in my head. I'm like, this is good.
No, I literally just picked it because... sangria comes from Spain, and I'm going to be talking about the Spanish flu, so I just kept things simple this week.
I love it. Far better reason than mine. Okay.
Oh, man. And it's not even really the Spanish. It's not a Spanish flu. It's called the Spanish flu, but it's not a Spanish flu. I'll get into that later. Anyway, so I'll be talking about the pandemic of 1918, the flu pandemic that is well known as the Spanish flu across the world. It started in the winter of 1918, and it rampaged our planet until roughly April of 1920. By the time the pandemic was over 500 million people were infected, which at that time is about a third of the world's total population, and 50 million people died worldwide, which if you're really good at math on your feet, that's a 10% death rate.
Jesus. Do you think really? We count Edward Cullen as part of that 10% death rate?
God damn it.
We had to bring in the Twilight reference.
I had to pull that in.
Of course. I'm sure he's in there. For all you Twilight fans.
I don't even remember that part, but okay.
I mean, it's fine. Out of those 50 million people worldwide, 675,000 of the deaths occurred in the United States. Unlike most flu epidemics, the Spanish flu was specifically deadly in young and healthy people who were between 20 and 40, which is something that even to this day is very unique to this specific strain of influenza. Usually the flu viruses will kill people who are more... immune compromise. So you're very young, you're very old. That was not the case with this strain. This strain targeted people who were otherwise very healthy, strong adults. Because of the time period that we're in, there was no flu vaccine back then. There were also no antibiotics to treat any kind of secondary infections or complications. So doctors had to rely pretty heavily on non-therapeutic tactics like isolation, good hygiene or teaching people how to have proper hygiene and masks to try and quell the spread of the virus at the time.
Wait, when did we get antibiotics?
Oh, they did this in Outlander. She tried to make it like beforehand. I think antibiotics were made in like the early 1900s or late 1800s?
Hang on.
I'm Googling. So, like, because I feel like every time we've talked, antibiotics have come up, but I really don't remember.
1928 was the discovery of penicillin.
Oh, that's God.
So we're still like a decade away from that.
Wow.
Yeah. So we don't, there's nothing yet. So you'll, okay, you'll see, I talk about it a little bit. I don't get into too much detail, but if you watch any kind of documentaries on the Spanish flu, or if you do your own research, the therapeutics that people were coming up with at home, because there wasn't a lot out there, it was very, I don't want to say pagan based because that's not the word I'm looking for, but it was DIY. It was very DIY.
Grab these mushrooms like, that I've ground to a paste.
This is medicine. This will help. Let me just take this, or let me just mix all these ingredients together and we'll be fine. So that's pretty much what people were dealing with. That's why health officials were relying more on cover your coughs, wear your masks, stay away from each other. They were relying more on those messages. And that wasn't even really at the beginning of the pandemic. This was more towards the tail end, like 1919 to 1920 is when we start getting into those practices. At the beginning, there wasn't much communication about this flu strain at all. So where it started, there's no real consensus on where or how this specific strain of flu got into the population. But the most recent research places the first known case at a military base in Kansas. So a young soldier came down with severe flu-like symptoms at Camp Funston and died with
Funston? They should have called it Funston flu.
Oh my God. Imagine. That's what we're calling it now. It's the Funston flu.
The Funston flu.
Well, he died within 24 hours of seeking medical attention.
Wow.
More than 100 other... Not so Funston. More than 100 others at the camp became infected within a week of him. And from the camp, this flu then spread to neighboring towns in Kansas. And medical professionals in those towns rang the alarm in a weekly public health report in April of 1918. But it's never picked up by the national press, nor does the government acknowledge the alarm. They're
weird.
I'll get into why.
No, there is the same, like,
no, it's
like what's happening today. Weird. Government not sounding the alarm on a pandemic.
Well, I'll get into it. I'm setting it up.
Okay.
So throughout the spring and summer of 1918, there's sporadic pop-ups of this flu strain, but there's no major mentions of any kind of outbreaks throughout the summer. And to any one who is not paying attention, it kind of just it almost like it disappears. It goes away. In Europe, however, during the same time, the pandemic was raging during the spring of 1918. If you don't know what's going on in world history at this time, we're in like the height of World War I in the summer of 1918, going into 1919. So in Europe, the stage is set for all the soldiers, and more than 3/4 of French troops ended up getting infected. And about half of Britain's army is infected with the flu.
Jeez.
Yeah, man.
So during this time, the United States, we get into the war, and we're sending ships literally packed like sardines with soldiers, both to Europe and then soldiers coming home from Europe in the same way. So they're coming home on these ships. And in September 1918, the second wave of this flu kicks up, with the first case popping up in Camp Devens in Boston. This second wave of the flu lasted until November and was responsible for a majority of the deaths. At Camp Devens alone, 14,000 people were infected and 757 died.
Oh God!
Yeah. In October of 1918 is when shit hits the fan in the United States. 195,000 Americans die in this month alone. There's a national shortage of nurses. Philadelphia hosts a super spreader bond parade, because the bond parades was how they were we were raising money for the war effort at the time. So they host this huge bond parade, which kills so many people in the city that the morgues were backed up by 500 bodies, and cold storage plants that were private manufacturers had to be used as temporary morgues. It's during this time, so the fall of 1918, is when you start to finally see lockdowns and mask mandates across the country. The pandemic continues in waves through 1919, with officials starting to educate the public on coughing etiquette, proper hygiene practices like, you know, wash your damn hands, cover your coughs, wear a mask. This is also when they start cracking down on public gatherings as well. The reason why the government response and press conference was so slow was because of the war effort. So while we were in World War I, and this wasn't just the United States, this was Europe as well, there were censorship practices put in on the press that prevented them from publishing anything that would distract from or jeopardize the war effort.
Wow.
So the reason why we know it as the Spanish flu is because Spain was a neutral party during the war, so they didn't have these censorship practices on their press, so they were freely reporting on what was going on. So to the rest of the world, this flu was only in Spain because the major, unless you were directly affected by it, you weren't seeing this in the news at that time. So that's why it was called the Spanish flu.
They didn't know it was the Funston flu.
Yeah, they didn't know that. It popped up in Kansas. But the reason why it spread so quickly is because not only were people not, it wasn't being widely reported, governments weren't really reporting it. Countries were also unwilling to lock down because doing so would jeopardize their war response. It would halt any kind of manufacturing of weaponry, vehicles, things like that. And the risk was just considered to be too great. So they didn't do lockdowns. And then I also mentioned, like, the ships were packed with troops that were going back and forth, not just between Europe and the United States, but between other continents as well, which is why it exploded in the way it did.
Does it make you uncomfortable when people are standing too close to each other now?
Yes. 100% yes. Like,
Step back. TV.
Step back.
It's really fun now, like, because I take the subway to get to work. And if anyone coughs, like, everyone's heads just immediately, like, shoot towards that person who coughed. Like, the fuck you do? Like,
you best step off.
You got it. But the Spanish flu was pretty similar. Most of the symptoms were pretty similar to your regular flu. So fever, chills, nausea, headaches, body aches. But what made it so deadly is the next phase of it, it would start to attack your organs. So a lot of people had, their skin would turn blue, their lips would turn blue, and their lungs would become full of this blue-ish pus. So they would essentially suffocate and die of pneumonia, is what people were dying from.
The I'm blue, I'ma die,
Is that where's that from?
Yeah, totally.
I don't think that was the inspiration behind that song. But if it fits, it could be the theme. The theme for the 1918
Rainbow Blue album. But was it Eiffel, Blue Eiffel or whatever their, what was the name? It's something Eiffel.
Eiffel 69?
Yeah,
that was it.
It's my jam in fourth grade.
Totally. All the talent show kids were doing that song. Dances to that song. Well, that's all I got, though. Spanish flu.
Spanish flu.
A lot of parallels.
If you're feeling like you're reliving history, there's a reason why.
You are. We're in an episode of the Twilight Zone. We're in an episode of the Twilight Zone right now.
Yeah.
I feel like that.
Yes. God. Yeah, yeah, I was reading, I watched a couple documentaries and just the articles I was reading. I was like, oh, I feel this.
Even watching documentaries on what I'm going to talk about, which is bubonic plague and Black Death, hearing experts talk about pandemics before 2020, like a lot of these that I was watching was 2013, 2019, 2018, and hearing them talk about like how there's only a few sort of strains that would bring us to these levels again before 2020 is like the freakiest, frustrating thing I've ever heard. Anyway, so I'm going to bring it a little more gross.
Up the gross factor?
I love gross.
Bubonic plague is a lot nastier than I remember it being.
You were alive when it happened?
No, but I
am.
I'm a witch. I didn't tell you. I'm hundreds She's of years witch. Old, Chelsea. She's a witch.
Not a witch.
But I didn't remember it being this gross, and we'll get into the symptoms and kind of what it did to people a little bit, but I just, ugh. And I found out some things that I also didn't know about, because usually when we're talking about high school, social studies and like middle school social studies, we are so focused on Europe and the United States and how things affect those two places. Not that this was in the United States, because obviously this is before discovering of the United States, but
it's before Europeans discovered the United States, correct? Right.
Yeah. Yeah. But so we just still focus on European history so much.
Yeah.
And we never, like, at least in my high school, we never talked about the origins and like the early period of the bubonic plague. It's all about, the only thing I remember is like the song.
Yeah. A song?
Isn't it the song, the Posy song?
Oh, yeah, Ring Around the
Rosie. Ring Around the Rosie.
Ring yeah. Around the Rosie. Before it hit Europe, I found out some gross things, because there were some times in the starting out towards Asia in what was then the Mongol Empire, and using bubonic plague victims as a way of biological warfare.
Oh! Yeah.
Which I was unaware of. So before we get into all of the...
I need to know the logistics.
Just praise the creativity of people back in the day.
some horrible creativity here. Because they would fling people's dead bodies and excrement over castle walls with catapults.
Oh my god.
One documentary I saw spoke about how they were flung so far that it is thought that the bodies would have exploded and aerosolized the germs in that way, and that's how people would breathe in the bubonic plague and get infected.
I have a question, and you probably don't have the answer for it, because I'm sure it did not come up in your research. But just in general, like, what was the velocity of a catapult?
I'm not sure.
So random.
Because I think there was different types of catapults throughout the ages. I'm sure it was a technology that was expanded upon and iterated upon.
Yeah, definitely. Like, but for, like, something to explode upon impact, like, how fast does that have to go?
I'm not sure. But I'm very curious.
People, if you are listening, tell us. We want to know. But
somebody smarter than us.
Yeah.
Somebody smarter than us, please tell me.
It was Greek. It's literally listed as being an ancient siege machine that could hurl heavy objects or shoot arrows with great force and for considerable distances. So it was created as a weapon.
Well, yeah, I know why. But like, what was the velocity of it? Like, how fast did it shoot?
Oh, the velocity? I definitely heard philosophy.
I was wondering why you're like, that's an interesting question. Like, I was like, I feel like velocity is quite a valid question.
Hang on.
Different Google search.
Sciencing.com. Sciencing.com says the initial velocity was about 50 feet per second.
Oh, Jesus.
At a 40 degree angle.
Okay. I'm gonna pretend like I know what that means. It sounds pretty rough.
Is it 50 feet per second?
Yeah, that sounds... Oh, Jesus.
50 feet per second, it's pretty fast.
34 miles per hour. So yeah, it's pretty fast for a human body to be traveling 34 miles per hour through the air.
Or just poop.
Or poop.
Oh, yeah, gross. I mean, and then I guess, so you're thrown, your initial velocity, so you're thrown, you gain more momentum as your kind of gravity takes over.
I'm still depending on how you thought I said philosophy.
I heard philosophy. That's why I was like, it's like philosophy.
The catapult. Deep drop, Chelsea.
Oh my gosh. So there's some getting back to the catapulting. There's some historical evidence that suggests that that army used catapults to hurl their own dead. Like, this is their own dead soldiers who've died of the plague over the walls of other cities that they were besieging. And if you weren't hit with a body, like, imagine.
You might have been sprayed by a body.
You might have been, like, the body might have exploded near you and you would have breathed that in. So they were, the fleeing country, the Genoese, were able to leave by sea and took the plague with them back to Italy.
Mm-hmm.
And it was also proposed that that's where it, like, 1347-ish era is when it got to Europe and spread throughout Europe. So it's believed that it started before then. So it's crazy. So there's a lot more things about Europe. So we're going to focus a little bit more on Europe, but I just thought that was insane. Hurling bodies of sick people.
As weapons.
As weapons. Yeah. As early biological warfare. When I mentioned this to Josh, he was like, yeah, I learned that in boot camp. And I was like, oh, okay.
Nice. Like,
this was new information to me.
Can you just imagine, though, the picture of the first time that happened? Like, what are they shooting at us?
Yeah, what is that? That?
Oh my God, it's a body. Just like.
That's some creative, horrible thinking.
It's resourceful.
That's what that is.
It's definitely resourceful. Prop.
Right? They didn't have to worry about burying the dead. They decided to use them as a source to further what their agenda. Like,
mass graves? Nah, we'll use these fuckers as ammunition.
Mass warfare. Here we go.
Yeah. So that's how you're, even before, like, those death ships, as they later call them, got into port in Italy, Europeans, like, had already heard about it, and they called it the Great Pestilence, which I thought was...
I remember hearing about that, yeah.
Yeah. And it was obviously going through all the trade routes. So wherever people were traveling from, that's where it was coming from. In early 1340s, it was already in China, India, Persia, Syria, and Egypt. Already in the early 1340s. And following the trade routes, like, somebody did a map online that was super interesting. And just the slow spread of it over 10 years or so across all of Europe and Asia. Fascinating. Because also horrifying, because if it took that long for us to do it in modern times, I just, imagine COVID lasting 10 years.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah.
No thanks.
No thank you.
Hard pass.
Yeah.
Hard pass.
Hard pass. But it was very scary. Like, people thought even seeing somebody who was sick or thinking about the Black Death would cause them to get sick. That's how scared of it they were. Clergymen who would give, like, last rites to people who were getting sick in the early times would just get sick themselves and die. People would not even tend to their own children who got sick. They would literally leave them.
Bye. It was nice knowing you. Good life.
And people.
Good wife. Bye.
Yeah, really. Bye. And people, like, just avoided everyone. They avoided each other. Like, it became slowly, like, a thing where people would just not want to talk to you if you were a stranger.
I mean, same.
True. True.
Interesting.
Shit, we all have the Black Plague, guys.
Human nature.
But they
maybe just... that's where the, like, uneasiness came from, is it became, like, just a trait not to trust people because they might be sick.
Yeah. I think so, because they thought even seeing a sick person would get them sick. Because they didn't understand how it was contracted. So they thought just seeing people would get you sick. So the fear of this was super high, especially amongst like in the 1300s, like we're super religious in Europe at this point, right? Still, we're very superstitious still. All those things are playing a part into how people feel about this. So people were stopped farming, the harvest went ungathered, and civil buildings were closed. And there was actually, I thought this was interesting, there's a one building that was being built in Italy at the time when this first got there, and it's still not finished to this day.
That's wild.
Yeah, they just never finished it.
Dang.
I forget which building it was, but I just thought it was super interesting that they just decided to not pick it back up. But I guess because it took so long over the course of years for it to ravage Italy that they just never picked it back up. So because all those civil buildings just basically closed because people were too afraid to even go, law and order basically fell apart. People would break into other people's homes. And 90,000 people died in Venice, and half of the population in Florence died.
Jesus.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Jinx. Pinch, poke, you owe me a Coke.
And since they're super religious still, I was watching one documentary that they were still having to bury the bodies in a certain way that met that religious requirement. So they dug trenches and buried bodies by thousands, but did it in a methodical way that it still met those standards for their religion, which That's was
crazy.
Yeah, which was facing everybody a certain direction. They would kind of layer them like a lasagna.
I'm hungry.
It's terrible. It's terrible to say it like that, but like they would just layer a row of bodies, then dirt, then row of bodies, then dirt, and like that's how they would build up these trenches.
It's like the episode of Friends with Joey Tribbiani, and when Rachel makes, what is it, the truffle? Jam? Good. Meat? Good.
That's terrible.
Awful.
But yeah. And then at one point, houses of people who they were knew to, like people knew to be sick, were ordered to be closed, and they would just shut people into their houses to die. As soon when it hit Europe, millions of people died in like the first 6 months of this.
Oh my god.
Yeah. In the spring of 1348, it was spread to France through those trade routes as well. So it's taking years to get over. So like 1346, we're in Italy, and look how long it took us to get to France.
Yeah.
I just thought that was super interesting. But what it did to people was disgusting.
Oh, I can't wait.
So this is more. An Italian poet wrote, at the beginning of the malady, certain swellings either on the groin or under armpits, so basically your lymph nodes, mm-hmm. waxed it to bigness of a common apple.
Others, I remember this from an episode of House.
some more or less, and these the vulgar named plague boils. So you would develop a blood and pus boil the size of a freaking apple or an egg, where Jesus. Your lymph nodes are mm-hmm. and your glands, like, oh, what? Mm-mm. So people had them in between their thighs where those glands are, on their necks, under their arms.
Can you imagine Dr. Pimple Popper going to town on this?
Ugh. Well, people with some, one doctor that survived by treating himself and those boils.
Ew.
And he, like, after he survived, he devoted himself to figuring it out after it. But so you develop those boils, which are disgusting, and blood and pus seeped out of them. Sometimes followed by a host of more unpleasant symptoms, which is freaking like every other flu, which is also chilling to me. Fever, chills, vomiting, diarrhea, aches and pains, and then death. Like
death. That escalated quickly.
Well, because people sometimes I was watching this one documentary where it said some people would just who were fine would contract it one day and would not wake up the next day.
Jesus.
At least it wasn't like a prolonged, like for some people, it wasn't like a prolonged illness. Like mine took a while.
Yeah.
That I'm going to get into. Like at least it was like, oh no. You know.
Yeah. Like even the 1918 pandemic, it was pretty quick. Like if you got it at a bad version of it, you were more than likely dead in a day or two.
I feel like this is a little more disgusting, though. With
it is definitely the more disgusting.
A lot of people also had internal hemorrhaging that caused purple and black blotches along their skin. Because what the bubonic plague does is it attacks your lymphatic system. That's what caused that swelling in your lymph nodes. And if that's left untreated, it can spread to your blood and your lungs.
Yikes.
Yeah. So super gross. Like I said, this one doctor literally treated his boils by lancing them off and like letting them drain. Just disgusting.
Honestly, I'm a huge fan of like watching the pimple and boil videos of being drained.
Are you Dr. Pimple Popper?
Oh, I love Sandra Lee. She is the best. No. She is queen.
No, she's good. Thank you. She's gross.
So gross. It's
she's not gross. The boils and stuff are gross.
I can't watch it. I can't watch it.
No, I can't.
I watch it all the time.
So does Phil.
I think I bonded over this with Phil.
You definitely have.
So I remember talking about it with the group, and I think Phil was very into it.
Yep, and I tuned it all out.
So this sounds just highly intriguing to me. Please continue, Karina. Tell me more about me.
Yes. So, but everyone left this guy for dead because they just decided he was dead and he miraculously survived because he took care of himself and like self-care all the way through he was sick for like 3 weeks. It was documented.
Damn.
Yeah. But some people weren't so lucky because in the 1320s leading up to the time of the plague, there was mass shortages of food. So people were already, what's the word for it? They were already kind of malnutrition. Damaged. Mm-hmm. They were damaged.
Damaged?
They were damaged. They were damaged goods.
Damaged.
No. Famished.
Damaged too.
Oh, I said famished.
I sworn you said damaged.
I heard damaged.
Oh, I'm sorry if I did, but I meant famished.
Well, so I was this one documentary talked about it because they in 2013 in London, they did some sort of huge construction project which brought up them finding all these trenches of people in Europe who passed away from the plague, and they dated around this time, and they doing these, I don't know if you call it an autopsy when it's bones, but they were examining the bones of these people, and they found signs of them being malnourished. Malnourished. Jesus, I don't know why I can't say that. Malnourished in their bones, which may have caused them to be predispositioned to die from the plague. I also thought it was interesting because if you survive the plague, you were almost healthier afterward.
That immune system is strong.
Yeah. If you survived, you were almost healthier after you survived the plague.
Your immune system got a workout.
It was super rare, but some people still survived, which I think is miraculous.
Yeah.
But they didn't know that it was brought to them via fleas and rats. Because, you know, most of these things at this time can be found almost everywhere in medieval Europe, and of course particularly on ships, which is how it made its way through Europe in the first place, which is just disgusting. Imagine like living in this time when there's just rats everywhere. Like I can't even handle a field mouse. So they treated the plague though by bloodletting, like I said, and boil lancing, which is gross. It's like super unsanitary, first off, because obviously we're living in unsanitary times because this is spreading so easily. And then a bunch of superstitious practices like burning herbs and bathing in rose water or vinegar. Why would you choose vinegar over rose water? But okay.
Is it like straight vinegar or is it like watered down vinegar?
I would imagine it's straight vinegar at this point. I don't think
I would pass out from the smell. I hate the smell of vinegar so much.
Really?
Yeah, like it physically disgusts me, the smell. I like vinegar in things. Like obviously it brings a delightful taste to most dishes, but the smell makes me want to die.
Wow.
Bubonic plague, take me now.
Got it.
I don't want to smell vinegar any longer.
Got it. That's if you got treatment though. if you even got treatment, because doctors started to refuse to see patients and priests stopped going to administer last rites because they saw everybody around them dying.
Yeah. Hard pass.
Basically. And then a lot of people fled the cities to the countryside, which I think is literally the worst because then you just spread it even more. And it also affected cows, sheep, goats, basically everything that they needed. And so many sheep died that they said that there was a wool shortage in Europe.
No, not the itchy wool. Yeah, but that's its own problem.
But it was more of a, it's kind of horrible because it was more of a every man for himself type of thing, even if like it was your children.
Yeah.
Which is just depressing. Many people believe that the Black Death was some kind of divine punishment and retribution against everyone in their sins for whatever reason. If you were heresy, blasphemy, they all thought everything was because of them. So if you, the only way to overcome the plague was to win God's forgiveness.
Can you imagine if that was actually the case, how the plagues would affect us now with all the debauchery that we have in current times compared to like then?
Maybe not like God, but like Mother Nature's way of being pause.
Yeah, I really think that, Mother Nature's way is, giving us a nice little, hey, you guys have gone too far.
Yeah.
But, but if it was, rooted in, that actual, God, God's punishing us kind of a thing, if that's God punishing them then, for things that they did then, can you imagine,
Now.
Now. how bad that would be.
Our books would be burned. They were
not saying that what we do is bad, just, because times change and stuff, but just compared to the books. Yeah, just compared to the normal of what we do today to the normal of then, we'd be pretty fucked right now.
Yeah, but it was just terrible because, of course, it took another turn for the worse, especially for Jews, because they turned against the Jews and said that they were the ones causing this. And
I feel they're, why are they always the scapegoats for everything?
It's, I have no idea.
Throughout history, it's just they get the worst of everything.
They get the shit end of it.
They really do.
So it's thousands appalling. Of them died and were massacred in 1348 and
1349. God, I hate people.
Because they're just a whole group called flagellants. Came up and they were the one, who came up with that one? And they were the ones pushing that movement towards trying to comfort people, but really it's, they already had this some sort of moral ambiguity and predisposition hate of Jews, because there's no reason for this crap. So
rage, I'm flipping tables.
So again, Jews are blamed for everything, and they murder them for no good reason. Because it's the rats, you dumbasses.
I didn't know that part of this, and that just makes me very angry. I know,
we didn't learn about that in school. That's why.
No, we did not.
No, we get, taught that, the Jewish people, the Holocaust and Egypt, but nothing else, really. And, they really just got the shit end of the stick all throughout history.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry, all of our Jewish listeners. You didn't deserve it. Your ancestors did not deserve it.
No, they didn't. It's just freaking horrible.
Yeah.
But through all that, it made its way throughout the continent. And it never really ended, because we still have the Black Plague to this day. And what was super disturbing to me was the documentary I watched that was in 2013. Said they did an analysis of the people's bones, and at the time it was in Madagascar. There was an outbreak in Madagascar of the Black Death, which is, I don't remember that. It's 2013. I think I was 13 at the time.
Wasn't there one this year, at the end of last year?
Was there? I think COVID took over everything.
Yeah, someone had it, I think, recently. It just pops up. How mixed.
It does. It still pops up. But the thing that I thought was scary was the one that they had in the 1340s. They did an analysis of that strain. It's the strain that was in Madagascar. It's the same exact strain.
Jesus. That's crazy.
I mean, the good news is that it doesn't mutate like that fast. So that's the good thing, I guess, on it.
It's yeah, and it's just a different set of circumstances surrounding it. There was obviously people are not as malnourished nowadays. There's technology, there's antibiotics, there's all these things.
Yeah, there's treatable things that can happen for people now.
Yeah. So the World Health Organization says there's still 1,000 to 3,000 cases of plague every year.
Oof, that's nuts.
Yeah, I didn't know it was that many. Compared to what we're living through right now, obviously it's not that many, but it's still a lot for something that is so
old.
Old and I think disturbing in its effects on the body.
Yeah.
Last summer, California.
Wow.
Jesus.
Reported its first case in 5 years, and a man in New Mexico in his 20s died of the disease in August.
Wow.
So it's definitely still around.
How transmissible is it, like, that these people had it, but it didn't spread, like, crazy? Is it, like, treatable now, or is it just not, like, that transmissible where it affects people like it did back then?
I think it's a, like I said, a different set of circumstances. Like, we're not as hygienic in the 1340s as we are now.
True.
There's not rats running down the streets here.
Yeah
there are.
There's
yeah, between been humans.
I mean, other than Manhattan, I have walked Manhattan at 5 a.m. and I've seen a few furry friends.
Large. They're so large.
They're so large. I've seen
I a few ones.
They have to bite you.
And then but they're just carrying pizza. Like, they're carrying pizza down the subway.
Anymore. And the between humans, it has to be direct and close contact with a person that has it in their lungs.
Okay.
Yeah, we're not running around with these things on a daily basis.
Yeah.
We're running away from rats.
That's why it's more...
At least I am.
Rare.
I'm running away.
That's- I had pet rats as a kid.
Did you really?
Yeah. I remember because the day that they died, we took my sister to the orthodontist and I was waiting in the car with my mom. And she told me in the car, and this was the most melodramatic thing that I've ever done in my life, is that she told me in the car. And then I started, like, using my fists and hitting the window. I'm like, why? Why did they die?
Oh, my God.
It was so melodramatic. Like, I look back and cringe, but I really loved them. They were the best. They were sisters, and they died on the same day, just a couple minutes away from each other.
Aww.
It was a very sad and traumatic time in my life. And I had a melodramatic breakdown in front of the orthodontist office in San Jose, California.
Oh my God.
I was like 8 or 9 when it happened.
Also, I have to bring this up since you did the War of the Roses, and because everyone is named Edward, I had to say the King of England during the bubonic plague was King Edward III.
Oh, hell yeah.
Also known as Edward of Windsor. And he...
Those Edwards.
1377. June 1377 was when he died.
Hmm.
So he...
Company Edward.
He reigned from 1312... Oh, no, not 1312. He was... January 1327 is when he began his reign... And lived throughout the entire plague.
Good for him. Seen millions of his subjects die.
I mean, I just thought it was interesting that it didn't get him.
I was looking back at photos and like of like Henry's and stuff, and they look all the same. Big old heads and tiny little hands crisscrossed in front of themselves.
I think it's just the way that people were depicted.
Big ol' heads, little tiny hands, right in like crisscross applesauce in front of their like portrait.
Maybe the artists weren't as good as they thought they were.
It's not my fault. I have a big head and little arms. I don't think you thought this through all the way. Honestly, Meet the Robinsons is one of the most underrated Disney movies ever. I love that movie so much.
Oh my God. I don't think I saw that one.
You'll cry. It's the only movie that has made me cry out of happiness.
Huh.
It is so sweet. It's so good. It has a beautiful story. And it's you have to watch it. Go on to Disney Plus and watch it. It is beautiful.
Okay.
And that's where the quote from the big head and little arms, I don't think you thought this through all the way. It's a T-Rex that says it.
Oh. Okay. I understand now, but
Jackie has nothing to say about any of this.
Anyway, I'm just surprised he lasted through an entire plague that took, what, how much of his, a third or more of his country's population?
Yeah. Yeah. That's bonkers. And all of Europe, I think it wiped out like over 50% of the population. And it took 200 years just to get back to pre-bubonic plague level population.
Which is fascinating.
Yeah,
that's
fascinating.
Yeah. That's nuts.
Anyway, wild. So that's bubonic plague. Enjoy.
Good job.
Woo!
Me gusta. I mean, I don't want it, me gusta, but like, good storytelling, me gusta.
I highly recommend that 2013 documentary, though, because it is very interesting. Though frustrating to hear experts talk about plague during these times
and
pandemic, documentaries like this are super interesting.
It must be so frustrating for those people who research ancient like epidemics and pandemics and seeing what's happening now and be like, we've been telling you this for years of how this would go down.
Like the, if you go watch the documentary on any of the documentaries that are out there about the 1918 flu pandemic, it's like, it's mind boggling how we're in this position now with the evidence. It's not even it's a century old now, but not even 100 years ago.
It's because everyone's made it political when it shouldn't be political. It should just be like, hey, care about people and wear your fucking mask. Okay.
You know what's depressing, though? Huh. Guess which one is the origin of the term quarantine? Bubonic plague. Bubonic
plague, yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Sailors were held on their ships.
Cracker.
Imagine being held on your ship. They held sailors on their ships for 30 days. And it was later increased to 40 days. And that's where quarantine came from.
Nope. They were not doing that for the Spanish flu, because the soldiers needed to get on the battlefield.
They used to burn ships. Yeah, if someone had something, burn it.
Okay, let's get into that.
I don't really get into that part that much. But first, I need to feed the cats because they're looking at an empty food bowl and looking back at me very forlorn. So I need to feed them real quick.
Well, there's
I'm going to do that.
There's our ad break.
Yes. And then Karina can make herself another pitcher of Bay Breeze.
No, I'm drinking sangria.
Sangria. Come on now.
Yes, sangria.
Chelsea, what are you talking about?
Well, I just choked on some of my sangria snack.
Chelsea said that her sangria is also a vessel for snacks.
Alcohol-soaked snacks. Oh, this is gonna be good. Chelsea,
oh my God.
What pestilence are you talking about?
Smallpox.
Why did you say it like that?
I don't know. Okay.
Oh boy.
This is gonna be fun. I am almost done with my pitcher of sangria and I'm feeling it. So hopefully this goes well. So today I will be going over smallpox, and this one
Smallpox.
Oh no.
Small boxes.
All small boxes. And in those small boxes, there is the disease of smallpox. And this one is a doozy. The virus has been around for a long time, so long that the origin is a theory. And since it was eradicated before like super, super modern medicine, the reason it caused death is slightly a theory as well, even though there's some pretty profound facts on why it caused death. And I found all my information on the CDC website and a bit on Wikipedia.
Look at you. Reaching out to different sources. I'm so proud.
First time branching out of Wikipedia.
Oh, Chelsea.
Oh, dear.
Look at me.
I think I'm extremely proud of you.
Grown.
You are.
Full grown.
I think college beat Wikipedia
it
out of
beat me. Straight the fuck out of me.
Yeah, like I can't even look at Wikipedia anymore.
Yeah, I didn't go to college. Well, I went slightly to college, but I didn't finish.
So you didn't get the same beating we got.
No, I didn't. All right. So smallpox's origin is unknown, but is thought to come from African rodents. The earliest cases are dated during the Egyptian Empire around the 3rd century BCE. As three mummies, including Pharaoh Ramses V's mummy, had visible smallpox scars on their faces.
Ramses IV's son!
Yep.
Bringing it back.
He got smallpox. Everything's connected.
Everything is connected.
All fucking circle.
Yep. I could not find the total amount of deaths over the years, but put into context on how bad the disease was, it killed at least 300 million people in the 20th century alone.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
It was eradicated in the
It's eradicated
in
the 1970s.
Yeah.
Ooh. Some rough stuff.
Yeah.
All right. So smallpox was transmissible through close contact within 6 feet of someone who had it. Weird.
Like they got these.
Like they used science to come up with these.
Oh my God, imagine that.
Right? Anyway, who would have thought?
We're snarky this evening. Continue.
Wait till you hear more of it. It's like, who would have thought?
2020 part two is not doing it for me. Past.
We could have learned from history to prevent the future.
That never happened.
We did not.
Continue.
Nope, didn't.
I am not satisfied with my 16-day free trial of 2021, so I'm a little snarky.
Yes. This year's already sucked.
Continue.
So, and then also, it was transmissible through physical contact with material that had leftover scabs or pustule residue.
Ugh. Ugh.
Yeah.
God. What? I didn't even, what? Residue?
Like pillows, sheets, clothes?
Yeah, so.
Ugh, pustule I'm vomiting in my
I'll
mouth already.
That in just a few moments.
No.
I feel like half of my actual presentation is just what smallpox did to people, and I only have a little section of the history of where it happened to people.
I mean, we're tipsy and depraved. We're focusing on the depraved part here.
Yeah.
Oh, here we go. You're going to learn a lot about the four different types of smallpox.
All right, let's go.
I'm ready.
So it is extremely similar to what we're experiencing now with COVID, with the close proximity transfers and keeping your distance. The only big difference of that was that it is transmissible through the entire sickness because of the pustule residue. The pustules contain the disease in it. So even if you're 21 days into having smallpox, if someone got the pustule pus on them, you would probably get it.
Wow. That's crazy.
Yeah. The first symptoms of the disease are very similar to the common cold, which is 101 degree fever, muscle pain, discomfort, headache, fatigue, nausea, vomiting, and backache. This stage usually only lasts between 2 to 4 days.
Okay.
Yeah. And so that's during the whole incubation is 12 days before the symptoms, the nasty symptoms start to appear. So those cold symptoms happen within those 12 days.
Okay.
And then by day 12, infected people will have their fever going to near normal and visible lesions of small reddish spots appear on the mucous membranes of the mouth, tongue, and throat. So you get these red spots all in your mouth, kind of strep throat. Strep throat's white spots. So you get red spots instead all in your mouth.
Yikes.
Oh, that's
These lesions will quickly enlarge and rupture, which will release mass amounts of the virus into the saliva.
Oh my God.
So are you just reinfecting yourself?
I physically cringed.
Yeah, so you just have the virus continually reproducing itself in your mouth, and then you're also breathing that. Whenever you breathe, it's going through your nose, through your mouth,
out.
And just
out
spreading
into the air.
Yeah. Yeah, disgusting. So it's in your mouth and just spreading.
Disgusting. Continue. I'm intrigued.
Wait till you hear more. It's really great. During this time, the characteristic pimples would appear and cover the entire body. Unlike chickenpox, where chickenpox usually was the kind of like torso and like slightly on the limbs, smallpox pimples would cover mostly the limbs and the head, but also like the actual like torso, but it was mostly on limbs and head. And it took about 24 to 36 hours for the lesions to appear. And after that, no new lesions would appear. So you would just go from having normal skin, and 36 hours, you would be covered head to toe with these like huge like pustule pimples.
Was it itchy like chicken pox?
It didn't say anything about itching, but like, so the lesions would like, they raised on some conditions. I'm about to get into the different variations, but they would kind of pop out and have a dimple in the middle of them, and they just have like pus in them.
Ugh.
Ew. And it would like cover their entire face. Like, it's not just like little pimples here and there, it's like their entire face is just like this huge pustule bubble.
Gross.
Yeah, I looked at a lot of pictures, and I did not know what smallpox looked like before this.
Oh, it's nasty.
I just thought it looked like chicken pox, like in my head from like school and stuff, but looking at actual pictures too. It is not that at all. It's gross. So within these 24 to 36 hours, lesions would appear. And this is where the smallpox took one of four turns. So the most common one was 90% of infections turned into the ordinary type. If you had the ordinary type, the lesions that covered your body would raise and fill with an opalescent fluid. And the fluid would become opaque. And within 24 to 48 hours, they would create the pustules.
Ugh.
The pustules were deeply embedded in the skin, and they were dense enough that they would feel like beads underneath the skin.
Ew.
These pustules would slowly leak, and by day 16 to 20, they would scab over and flake off, which would cause scarring. If the blisters merged, it would cause the outer layer of skin to fully detach from the underlying flesh.
Oh my God. Oh God.
Yeah. It's real gross.
That's not
really
chicken pox at all.
No, it's not.
During my research of this, there's several times when I walked out into the living room and I just like talked to my parents, and I was like, I'm just like super grossed out right now. Like, this is so gross.
Well, our parents have the vaccine. Like, our parents got the smallpox.
Yeah, my dad has a scar of it, and my mom had the vaccine, but she doesn't have a scar.
Yeah, my dad has a scar.
My dad has the scar, too.
Yeah. So people who got this, the fatality rate of ordinary smallpox was on average of 30%.
Jesus.
But on some batches were as high as 60%.
Oh my God.
Holy shit.
Yeah. And before I go too far, for a long time, no one knew exactly why people died from smallpox, and most sites still kind of list it as a mystery. But I did find a Science Daily article from 2009 that researchers now believe that the virus attacked the immune system and blocked molecules from being made that blocked viral replication.
Oh.
Yeah, so I'm probably very wrong here, but I think that means that your body doesn't make antibodies to fight off the virus, so you just stay sick until you die.
Yep, exactly. It's like your immune system's just like, nah, you good.
Yeah.
Well, also, you're reinfecting yourself over and over again if we're...
Yeah.
Yeah, so you just can't make antibodies. So that's why this has such a high fatality rate. And the ordinary type is the least... Well, I guess there's one other that has the lowest fatality rate, but this one is the second lowest fatality rate. The other ones are pretty much like, okay, you had a good life. Bye.
Yeah, you're done.
They're pretty much almost at 100% fatality.
Mm-hmm. And you had a 1 in 4 shot. Jesus.
Yep.
Jesus.
And these aren't like different strains. This is just like based on like, I guess, your immune system on how you reacted to the virus. So it wasn't like a different strain that affected people. Like, you could have the same person infect like 4 different people, and these people would all get the 4 different types.
That's crazy.
So the second type of smallpox is the malignant, and you could guess how well this goes.
Not well.
It happened between 5 to 10% of infected people. The prodromal phase was more severe and lasted 3 to 4 days. And that's the sickness phase, where the fever would be more harsh. The flu symptoms would be pretty bad. The skin lesions matured slowly and usually stayed flat as they contained little to no fluid. The lesions were soft and velvety to the touch instead of feeling like a bead underneath the skin. And a day before death, the lesions would turn gray.
Oh,
yeah.
Like a zombie.
And this, yeah, is like, so these people would just turn like gray in color. Ugh. And then they would die.
It's like you're pre-dying on the outside.
Yeah. This version was nearly always fatal with like a 90% or higher fatality rate. The third type is the hemorrhagic. I think I'm saying that right.
Oh, yeah. That doesn't sound good.
This one's probably the worst out of all of them.
You think?
It is worse than the malignant. So
hemorrhagic is not good. Okay.
No. So the third type is hemorrhagic, which instead of lesions and the pustules that would fill with the fluids, people would just bleed under the skin, making it look charred and black. So their entire body would look completely black because they just had bleeding all underneath their skin.
Oh my God.
This type is also known as the black pox. Early hemorrhagic smallpox would cause bleeding in basically all of your internal organs as well. And death would come suddenly between the fifth and seventh day of infection. Okay. So that's compared to the ordinary where you don't even get like the pustules until the 12th day.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
This happened quickly or within a week.
Yeah.
Early stage was 100% fatal.
Wow.
Late stage hemorrhagic smallpox would cause bleeding later, but the stage still had a 90% or higher fatality rate.
Oh my God.
So the late stage would usually, the bleeding would start between like the 12th and the 15th day, I think, but it caused a higher death rate.
Oh God.
Yeah. It gross. So the last type is modified, and this type usually occurred in vaccinated people. This type rarely, if ever, got severe and was rarely fatal and was more comparable to chickenpox. So people who had the vaccine would sometimes still get smallpox, but it would just look like chickenpox instead of actual smallpox. And if they were pretty healthy, they would usually just get over it pretty quickly.
Wow.
So So speaking of vaccinations, let's talk about how people tried to prevent smallpox. The first method was the use of variolation, which was the process of scratching material infected with smallpox onto a person's arms or having them breathe it in through their nose.
So to infect them? Like what?
Yeah. So the people, of course, would develop smallpox through, though fewer people died from this version if they had acquired it naturally.
Interesting.
Yeah. So that was way back in like the 1700s though.
Okay.
That was like, I guess they're a try on herd immunity, possibly. I don't know. But then in 1796, Edward Jenner began working on a vaccine after he noticed that milkmaids had gotten cowpox, never developed symptoms after variolation. Jenner first tested the vaccine by extracting the pustule goods from the cowpox sore and then injecting it into the 9-year-old son of his gardener.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, God. Another use of people.
Yeah, so he just asked his gardeners, like, and also just for people to know, smallpox was very deadly to children. Like, it was worse. Not good if a child got this. Wow. Yeah, it was worse. So for months afterwards, Jenner regularly exposed the kid to smallpox, and the child never developed the illness. Due to his findings, the vaccine replaced the practice of variolation.
Wow.
Yeah.
I feel like that was such a shot in the dark.
It really was. It's like,
he could have killed that kid. Smallpox. He really could have killed that kid.
Yeah, like, he really could've. You might die. Your son might die, but give me your arm.
Let's just try this out.
Let's try something real quick.
Yeah. I mean, luckily it worked.
Jesus.
Yeah. So the vaccine continued throughout the years. And in 1959, WHO, or the World Health Organization, put a plan in motion to eradicate the smallpox entirely. The virus was already eradicated in North America in 1952 and Europe in 1953 through vaccinations. So WHO just had to concentrate on South America, Asia, and Africa, as it never fully affected Australia. Huh. By 1971, it was eradicated in South America, followed by Asia in 1975, and finally Africa in 1977. The last documented person to die from smallpox was Janet Parker on September 11th of 1978. And she was like, I believe she was a photojournalist who was like overseas, like documenting like these, yeah, the illness. And then on May 8th, 1980, WHO officially declared the smallpox was completely eradicated. To this day, it is still considered the biggest achievement in international public health. So before I wrap up, I wanted to go over a couple bits of depravity that people have probably heard of before with smallpox. So I'm sure you all have heard of smallpox blankets that were given to Native Americans before. And according to an article on history.com, this is only to be confirmed to have happened once by Lord Amherst at Fort Pitt in 1763. And one is just too many to begin with. So basically, there's these letters going back and forth about how to eradicate Native Americans. And he suggests giving them smallpox blankets that have been infected with smallpox to them to just naturally make them die. Which is
Yeah,
super fucked up. It's not really confirmed if they actually gave the blankets to them, as they only have the notes that were sent back and forth between a couple of people on just like, hey, like, what if we do this? But it is thought that it was definitely tried. But however, even if the smallpox blankets were not given out, the indigenous people of America had never experienced smallpox, measles, or the flu before. So there is no type of immunity. And these three viruses killed up to 90% of Native Americans.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't realize it killed so many people.
It killed a lot. And still treat it horribly to today. It's rage.
More rage for people.
It's all the rage.
Yeah.
And so another part where the United States had smallpox introduced somewhere, and you know, it, not that the United States government did, I'm not implying that, but just like it's kind of what happened. Smallpox was introduced in Hawaii by a merchant ship in 1853. The disease spread rapidly, and by 1854 up to 5,750 Hawaiians had died from the disease.
Wow.
So that's just within a year of it being introduced to their islands that this happened. And it spread throughout all of the major islands in Hawaii. And during this time, too, there was a lot going on in Hawaii. It wasn't a state yet. And there was a huge sugar trade with people trying to set up sugar plantations, and a lot of white people trying to claim that they have a right to thing that they have no rights to. And it kind of helped the smallpox disease helped kind of make them weasel their way in to the government of Hawaii, and it led to the overthrow of the monarchy in Hawaii as well, which happened in the 1890s.
Another overthrown monarchy.
I know, that was the one that I was originally gonna do, but it just made me sad because it was just like, it was all these people and like trying to lay claim to something just because, you know, money. And sugar was a huge profit back then.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like they were creating sugar plantations in Hawaii. And it was overall pretty fucked up. And the United States intervened very illegally. And it was only in the 1990s by Bill Clinton, I think, that they issued a formal apology for the interference of the
U.S.
Yeah. Wow. That they issued an apology on behalf of the U.S. to the Hawaiian monarchy.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
It's pretty fucked up. If you haven't read about it, hey, 10 out of 10 recommend. It's messed up. So the last bits of the virus are only in two locations today. They are in the CDC Prevention in Atlanta and also in the Vector Institute in Russia. So if we ever see smallpox make a comeback, it will be solely due to the intentional release from one of these two places. And that is smallpox.
Gross.
I was so sure I had gotten that vaccine. I don't know what made me sure, but I was so sure. I looked it up afterward and I did not, obviously, because we eradicated it way before I was born. But I just thought since my parents got it, I had to have gotten it.
Right. I remember my teacher in middle school, she had the huge, like, because it's a bubble on your arm, the scarring from the smallpox vaccine.
It's like a circle.
If you've ever seen Outlander, it's a witch's mark.
Yeah, she's a witch.
She's a witch.
Burn her.
I mean, we just get so many vaccines as a kid that I just thought it was in there.
The vaccines now are just like, you know how many kid like vaccines they get before they turn like two? It's like in the 40s.
Really? I was looking at the CDC like recommended by age vaccines, and I was like, I definitely got all of these.
Yeah.
Because I was just so curious if I had gotten the smallpox one that I was like, well, let me go down the list now that I'm here. Make sure I got all these.
Yeah, I'm like, I feel like it's a lot, but you know, that's also why people live longer today. That and hygiene.
Yeah. That and washing your damn hands.
Wash your fucking hands.
Yeah, people are disgusting.
Take a bath every now and then in fresh water, please.
Fresh water. Well, yeah, right? The water was maybe not as clean.
Yeah.
When I say maybe, it was definitely not as clean.
I mean, even like back when my dad was a kid, because my dad is one of seven kids, I think. And they used to like rotate bath turns. Like it would like they drain the water every three kids after the bath.
Wow.
My dad always grumbles too that because he was the third oldest. So he was the last in the bath of the first batch.
Oh, no.
That sucks.
No. The worst.
You.
The worst place to be in that part.
Yeah.
Oh, your poor dad.
But he turned out great. I love him so much.
All that dirty bathwater.
Yeah.
He's still alive.
Yay, parents.
But he also grew up in like the middle of like nowhere, New Mexico.
Gotcha.
We call it the high spot in our family. Which isn't an actual place on the map, but like whenever someone in our family is like, oh, like on the high spot, we're like, oh, okay. Yeah, we know what we're talking about.
Interesting.
It's in Silver City, New Mexico. Fun facts about the Atkins family.
Fun facts.
Yeah. You know, my grandmother's name, or not grandmother, great grandmother's name was Carlota Lopez.
Really?
Yeah.
I think we did talk about this.
Yeah, like I am like 15% like Mexican or something like that.
You would never know that.
Never guess. You would never know.
You should do one of those 23andMe's though.
You should.
I got one from my dad.
From your dad?
Last Christmas. No, I got one for my dad.
Oh, for your dad. Yeah, you should get one for yourself.
Do
That'd
it.
That'd be fun.
You should do it.
Because my mom is like 100% Irish, so that'd be interesting. She was born in Guantanamo Bay because my grandfather worked for the CIA and was stationed there.
Interesting. That's so random and interesting.
Yeah.
What?
Fun facts. I got all of them. My mom was born in Cuba. So much about heritage from us, guys.
Yeah,
or just the least me.
The tangent.
I feel like I set a precedent on the first episode that I really have to reveal something about myself every episode.
I guess so.
I guess.
I pick, right?
Karina, I was going to
say, what are you doing?
Master Depravity. What are we talking about?
I am going to go with bizarre medical treatments throughout the ages.
Oh, hell yes. Yes. Oh,
I'm very excited for this one.
I'm very excited.
Yeah. So do your homework, ladies.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes. Yes, yes. Yes, ma'am. And I think we also have a special announcement, too.
Oh, yes.
Is that we are setting up, because we are a bi-weekly podcast, because we like our livers and we want them to stay our livers for the rest of our lives.
Sustainable.
Yeah. Is that we only do this podcast every other week to give our livers a break. But we want to give you guys something every week. And so after every tipsy and depraved recording that we do, we're going to do a smaller recording where only one of us talks about something paranormal or spooky that has happened throughout history. And it's going to be called Tipsy and Paranormal. And that'll come out on the off weeks. It'll just be a shorter episode that's about 30 minutes long or so. And that way you get your tipsy and depraved fix weekly.
Because you love us so much.
Love us. Love me.
Follow.
Yep. Yes. Follow us on
Tipsy Depraved on Twitter, at Tipsy Depraved Podcast on Instagram,
Spotify Podcast,
Apple Podcast, and pretty much anywhere you get the podcasts.
That's a wrap.
That's a wrap. Bye.
Bye. we're done.